Welcome to Bitches on Comics. I'm your host, Essie Fleenor, and I'm here today with another one of your hosts.
Well, here we are again. I could never believe it, but here we are once more. You, Essie Fleenor, one of the hosts of Bitches on Comics. Me, Sarah Century, just another host, just another person trying to live in this world. And somebody who we absolutely have talked to probably more than anybody because, I don't know. I feel like this is like my roommate almost at this point. But we have Stephanie Williams on the pod again for the maybe sixth time, seventh time. I don't know. Every time it's delight. You have probably heard it, but if not, Stephanie, welcome and tell everybody where to find you and kind of, you know, what you do, what you're up to.
Hey, I'm so happy to be back. This couch is so comfortable because I've clearly left an impression on it.
But your butt print is just perfectly worn in, so you can just scooch right in.
The butt print of our hearts.
Yes. Please put that on a shirt.
An indelible butt print on my heart.
But I am a full-on writer of sorts. I write funny books, as the older folks like to call them. Also do a little hosting on the side. If anyone who listens to this podcast watches The Boys, you don't have to explain yourself. I understand. I get it. But if you do.
And Steph knows that I'm not Team Boys.
Yes. But if you do, find faith and solace in a queer Black woman and another Black woman hosting the after show for it. So by the time you listen to this episode, the first episode for that will be out, and then the following week, and so on and so forth. So that's kind of what's happening right now. Some other stuff that I want to talk about so badly, but because I've been such a frequent guest, I'll be back, so y'all will know soon enough.
we're not going to let you get away from us. You know, you still did one of my very favorite ever Halloween episodes we had, because you chose, like, all these the fucked up movies.
Yes.
Yeah. And I was like, tell me everything.
Well, I got even more messed up movies if we want to do this again for Halloween. So just let me know.
Yeah, we do.
Well, I will be there. Weird movies and all.
Well, we will look forward to it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so among the big thing we're talking about today, because it's Pride. Happy Pride, everybody.
Happy Pride.
Happy Pride, Steph. Happy Pride, Sarah. Happy Pride, Kate. Happy Pride, listeners. Happy Pride, Monica.
Everybody.
Everybody, if I didn't name you, you still get a happy pride. Happy pride to you, friend.
Your pet.
If you want to edit your name into this, happy pride.
You
then
are.
Edit your name in. There you go.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. So the reason we're here is obviously Steph, who is delightful and amazing and perfect. And I just am so happy to be talking to you right now. And a wonderful Bi Pride team member, Woohoo Go Bis. And we're going to talk about Nubia and Io a little bit today. And by a little bit, I mean the whole fucking time.
Bunch.
I'm so excited.
Yeah. Well, you know, I would love to hear, I think we talked about this actually for our panel we did for FlameCon last year, but I would love to hear about how you got introduced to the relationship between Nubia and Io, like how, like what, where you saw it manifest, and then like what was important for you to make clear on the page as a creator.
So, just a funny tidbit to that, Vita and I were just kind of brainstorming characters to make sure that we included. I was like, well, I definitely want to give Nubia a love interest because I feel like that will give her that lived-in experience. So Vita had mentioned Io, and then I went to go Google search because, like, I knew who Io was, but it had been a while since I had, like, read her in anything. So you know how in Aliens, so the second movie, how the one actress plays a woman of Latinx descent but actually is white? So that was a picture that I had saw of Io. Like, she looked like there might have been little Latinx heritage there. That was not the case. Io is definitely white. But anyway, I mentioned that because I was just like, okay, yeah. Like, you know, let's do, you know, this pairing or whatever. This will work out. And then come to find out, like, oh, no. Your memory was trash. And also, shout out to comics never being consistent with the coloring of characters. So I was like, whatever, move on from that. But the reason why I bring that up is because, you know, as somebody who's read a lot of comics and really focused on just Black characters in themselves, like, I knew how few and far in between it can be to have, like, two Black characters be love interests in one another. So that is what gave me pause initially, because I knew that that was something that was like, well, hey, you're here, so like make that happen. However, this is Themyscira, and it's very different from if Nubia was in the real world. Like, the same BS that we had to put up here just would not exist in that way. And by that, I mean just as far as like race and all of that, because they are a race, they're Amazons. So once I was able to kind of work past that, and I went back to read some of Io's appearances, I noticed that, yeah, she had a thing for Diana, but it was never returned. And I was like, wow, that's really sad and terrible. And here we are making sure that we make lesbians as miserable as possible, doing the good old thing that media loves to do. And I was like, well, yeah, let's not do that. So for Io and Nubia, it just started to make a ton of sense, because if Nubia had been champion of Dune's doorway all this time, she isn't getting a whole lot of face time with the rest of the Amazons in the same way as somebody who, I don't know, like a Philippus or a Hippolyta or Penelope, like none of them. But somebody that she would probably see a whole lot would be Io, because, I mean, champion, she herself is a weapon. Then you have the blacksmith. So on a very meta level, it made sense. In a very intimate level. So metaphors, all that, like, it just made sense that these two would develop, if anything, a friendship first, and then eventually, you know, some type of romantic ties. So once that started to really come together and I saw it, I was like, yeah, like, I'm going full steam ahead with this and writing these two characters. One, so Io, because blacksmiths deserve love too, has, you know, her love and every and appreciation and respect reciprocated. And then for Nubia, someone who is, I don't like, supposed to be like this really strong Black Amazon, protector of Doom's doorway and all these other things, has someone who, you know, she can be soft around and vulnerable and understands her and won't question and will also kind of have a little bit more insight to what her day-to-day life is too. So at the very end of the day, like, it just made all the sense in the world to me, minus all the other things that I was like considering and thinking about. So Io and Nubia became a thing.
They became such a thing.
Such a thing. Such a thing. It's so nice to hear about how you thought about it. Yeah. No, it's so cool. Because I also, you know, I think about that a lot. And I think, you know, a lot of my friends who are Black talk a lot about, like, why are Black characters always paired up with white people? And so it really makes sense that that was part of the thinking that went in for you. So I just wanted to say thank you for sharing that. You know, I'm obviously white, Sarah's white, but it means a lot for you to bring that conversation here. So I just wanted to start with saying, like, thank you for sharing your thinking behind it and helping us sort of think about why is, and you know, I'm trying to force this on everybody. Yes. Why is Nubio the best ship ever? I'm like, it's Nubio, get on it.
I'm on it.
When it comes to like writing comics that you're just not, I don't know, like, there are several levels of thought, at least for me, that go into it, especially because of the way that I approach comics when I read them. I was just like, yeah, so like this, and this. But this is why I pivoted to this type of thing. So like, nothing is ever done, at least on my part, haphazardly. I'm considering all these things. And like, I knew, like, if me preparing those two together, like, I was going to let some folks down. But the thing that I've been learning and continue to learn, that if you try to please everyone, you will end up writing literally nothing. And there are plenty of stories that I will go on to tell. And hell, I could be writing right now that involves two Black folks together. So, you know, like, it's not the only one, I guess, is where I had to get to, where I was just like, yeah, this one story, and it makes sense for this character or both of them. So just do what works best. And then Nubia still ends up having a Black love interest, a tragic one, but, you know, that is still there. So unfortunately, that did keep me up at night.
Yeah. Ayo is a really interesting love interest as well, because I think that maybe we talked a little bit before about how butch representation is almost non-existent, right? I just don't really see it very much, because if you see lesbians, you know, they basically are like very femme, right? To an extreme, I think, in almost any media. And that's fair, because there are many, I would say, like, I mostly identify with them. So I would say that, you know, there's plenty of us out here. But I also am just like, yeah, but that's not all of lesbians. And so we definitely do see, in many ways, a homogenized version of what queerness is. And so I do think that there is something very interesting about Ayo stepping in as the love interest we always wanted her to be, right? Because I think that she's trying to be a love interest way before this, and has this big, long history of that, where almost the only time we see her, she's out here just being buff and like flexing, and all of these women are like not interested in her. And it's always kind of just like, what? Because like, it doesn't make sense. But on top of everything, it's just like, at the very least, you have this character who, I think Ayo doesn't look like a lot of people. I think that Ayo is a very unique character. And I appreciate that Ayo is like low stress on Nubia, right? Like, Ayo is this person who's just like, if I challenge you, it's going to be in like the softest, most gentle way possible. Like, I'm never going to try to like, you know, take anything away of like what you are as a person. And I think that that was something where I am loving reading their interactions as you write it, because it's like, it's literally what they both have deserved this whole time, right?
Mm-hmm. And so funny enough, you bring that up, because like the moment I saw Ayo's guns, I was just like, well, yeah.
The guns.
Because if we're doing this thing where we're thinking of Nubia as herself as a weapon, who better to handle her than Ayo? Yeah. And then also to have Ayo herself allowed to be soft, too.
Yeah, because that's the stereotype, right? Is that if you're a butch lesbian, then you like don't have soft moments. And I think that, yeah, that's like an issue. Kind of ongoing in media, right? Like, it's another media thing where it's like every now and again we see a butch lesbian, but usually she's just like, and I'll punch you in the face, dude, or like whatever.
Yeah, no.
Which is cool. Like, I love that. Ayo will do that, right? Like, Ayo's on that train. But so will femmes.
That's so actually will what we're advocating for, is more femmes fighting people. Yeah, that's good.
Even in the short amount of space that you have done a really good job at showing a lot of different sides to things and being like, this is kind of a more complex person than what we knew before. Because before we just knew Ayo was out here shooting her shot, but like not really anybody was picking up. And like, that's like a mixed metaphor. But anyway. You have Ayo just being kind of neglected as a character. And I think Nubia is more egregious. Like, I think that Nubia being neglected was ridiculous, and it was a really long-running thing, and it has a lot of issues behind it. But then you go, well, Ayo was definitely a character that was very much also just kind of like, please write me. Like, please write me.
Yeah. And then also, please stop putting me in leather, just right on my bare breast. There's no chafing at all that would happen.
Isn't that an Amazon thing, right?
Yeah, but it's just like, you know, I'm sure that's okay for a little bit, but not all day. Not all day. Because I don't know, do they have nipple cream there? They would.
Yeah, yes. They have some bomb nipple cream, I bet. I bet it's like cannabis infused. I assume.
Oh my God.
I mean, yes.
Like looking for it right now. Like on Amazon, looking for this product that does not exist.
You're going to Amazon for the Amazons, if you will.
It's not doing what I want it to do.
So So another another reason, I didn't realize this, but it must have been subconsciously, that I just thought that Io and Nubia would be just a beautiful pairing is going back to Nubia's original origin story. So one, you all would be very surprised how many folks are just huge fans of that origin story, so much so that they actually don't like the new origin story for Nubia. I still can't really wrap my mind around that one, but okay. I mean, to each their own. But the reason why I bring that up is because in that origin story, Nubia deals with isolation. She brings that up, I think, in 205, when you kind of get that backstory as to how she came to be and why she really can't remember too much of anything, and like being this weapon of Mars and sequestered away on this floating island, which will be making an appearance in the new series. But I digress. Just thinking of that and how, I don't know, like she gets this sword from Mars and stuff, and everything is kind of forged in like anger, right? Anger, loneliness, all these other things. And I thought to myself, well, so what if she doesn't get a weapon that is forged by the gods? If anything is stronger than the gods, I would think love would be. I mean, you have Aphrodite, who is a pretty much embodiment of that.
You just gave me chills all over my body.
I know.
So, I thought if I invested into their relationship, by the time we get to the fourth issue, the end of that, where Io makes this weapon for Nubia, and she shows her plans for it in issue 3. To me, that just seemed very poetic and something, again, that does service to both of those characters. One, for Io, too. It's not like Nubia asked her to make that. It's just something that Io wanted to make out of her love for Nubia. It's something that she thought really embodied her. This balance, this staff that can do more than one thing, both offense and defense. And I don't know, like for Nubia to receive that, to me, like that just felt like a very beautiful moment that we don't often get, especially between two female characters in Cape comics anyway. Like, you know, forget the gods. Let's show that the Amazons also have some type of power. Like, they too are badass without the gods in that way. So, like, why couldn't they be able to do something like that for one another? So I just kind of wanted to, just outside of Nubia and Io, just kind of show that, you know, the women on this island, they are not only passionate when it comes to fighting, but like they're passionate in so many other ways that matter. And this is one of them.
Well, you gave me chills, I think, 3 different times while you were talking. The idea that the only thing stronger than a god is love. I think I need to go lay down and cry for 6 days. That's like,
I might cry about that.
That's so beautiful. And suddenly I'm like, oh shit. Something I read in both Nubia and the Amazons and in Queen of the Amazons, it's like, oh shit, a bunch just clicked for me too when you said that. So, wow, that's a good one. I'm going to lock that away.
So funny enough, because I know like a lot of folks was like, man, this reads like there's more to come. I'm like, yeah, because there was.
Yeah.
So much more. Yeah, you know, so I think last time you were here, we got to talk about Nubia and the Amazons a bit. I was just flipping through 4 while you were talking about her giving the weapon. And there's like this moment, and you do this really well in your panels. I've seen it, like, I think every time I see Nubia and Io, Nubio together, like they press their heads together in this really sweet way that to me is like one of the deepest forms of intimacy. Is like,
that's what my rabbits do.
Yes.
I'm going to put my big dumb face on your big dumb face, and that's going to be like a nice moment. And there's so much love in those panels.
Whether this was a queer couple or a head couple or whatever, this is from me reading so many romance novels. And there's just so many different forms of intimacy, and it does not always have to involve like people stuffing their tongues down each other's throats. Like, that's fine. There's no problem with that, but it's so funny. Like, when I'm reading a romance novel, it's never the filthy stuff that makes me kind of giddy or like hide away and try to like look around to see if anybody's looking at what I'm reading. It's always the softer stuff. So So like the hand or somebody saying something that just will make you blush or whatever. Those are always the moments that make me go, oh my God, like, should I be reading this? This seems dirty, even though it's a beautiful thing. Meanwhile, the filth, I'm just like very straight face. Nothing's happened. I'm just like, I'm zoned in and I'm reading. So for me, I was like, yeah, let me just show this. Cause I feel like for two folks who trust each other and they've had a long time to build, a deeper connection with one another, small gestures like that would be something that just comes second nature.
Mm-hmm.
And also, like, who doesn't like to, I mean, come on, you touch foreheads, if anything, like, that is just everything.
Yeah, that's how I know my rabbits bonded. I was like, oh, those two are best friends now because they push their faces together and they just sit there with their eyes closed, with their heads touching. And I'm like, what?
Because, I mean, and also unrelated, maybe this was a subconscious thing too, but for, I watch a lot of animal docs. I don't know why, like, I'm just obsessed. And also just thinking of like Disney stuff, unfortunately or fortunately, for the movies and things that just deal with like animals, I'm thinking like Little Bear, which isn't Disney, it was, I think, DreamWorks. But anyway, like when animals show affection to one another, like they do that too. So there was something also right. very primal in that way too. And not just like same-sex animals do the same. I don't know, like, I just feel like that's a form of communication that, yes. So like that is a form of communication that regardless of anything, like I just feel like be it platonic friends, romantic love interests, probably not one night stands, but you get the gist of what I'm trying to say. Like that is just something, mm-hmm. a very strong community type of thing that I also felt like would be in those types of gestures. So I'm happy that you all love them because I was like, damn, how anybody else feels. I want some forehead touching. I want some shoulder grabbing and, soft hands on the chest and all those little moments that just make you say, oh, man, I don't want it to end.
They love each other so much. Yeah.
I'm honestly just trying to stop crying enough to talk.
I know. I'm so happy you got to write these characters because I think that the whole world has changed for Nubia just in the last year or so. And it's been really fun to witness.
It has. It's actually been pretty surreal, actually, because like this second series or even like her appearance in DC Pride, these are all things that... DC Pride, I definitely didn't know that was happening until December of last year. But the second series, that was something that was kind of, you know, maybe possibly, but not really a thing that I could just reach out and touch. But after Nubia and the Amazons, it's just like, yeah, so you have the story beats and stuff for the second series? And I was like, no. But I guess, like, let me go ahead and hammer those things out. And I'm here to break hearts in the second series too.
That's okay. I love that. Yeah. That's part of it sometimes where you're just like, ah, my ship has parted ways. I don't know what to do. And then you like lay on the ground for, I don't know, maybe not everybody does that.
Nubia and Aya would be fine for now. I'm not touching because actually
I was like
because Aya almost lost. I mean, Aya was almost lost to chaos in the trial of the Amazon. So I was like, absolutely not. We will not, like, yeah. I mean, if you gotta take her arm or her eye or something like that, do that. But no, we cannot have it. Everyone that really has invested a lot into this relationship. So let's keep it going.
Let's keep it for a hot second.
So I fought for that. Yeah, because so for all of you Nubia and Aya fans, I was in there fighting to make sure that they stayed together. Because the other thing that unfortunately happens a lot. You get a ship, a legitimately, you know, decent ship. And then it's just like, oh, well, hope you enjoyed that because it's over now.
That's like the Z plot straight up, not even the zombie plot, but like the ZZZ spot, like where they go, oh, you've got Magna and Yumiko and they're like the hottest shit ever riding around on a horse together. And then they're like, two episodes later, she's like listening to a country song and like reading a book and then they break up. And I'm just like, man, why you have to come just for me? Because like, I think I watch all of these shows where I'm, especially Walking Dead, right? Where there's so much time given for these heterosexual couples where it's just like page after page, every issue ends on it, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And then they're just like, blink and you miss it, lesbians. And I'm like, damn.
Yes.
So I am appreciating that this is not blink and you miss it, lesbians, because it's been just kind of neat to see how they interact with each other. But also, I think it really is part of both of their character projection. Like, I think that they're both going through a lot of changes right now and stepping into mm-hmm. the limelight in a lot of ways. And I think that there's no better person for each of them to have with each other, you know, at this specific moment in time.
Absolutely. 'Cause change is coming. Unfortunately or fortunately, if you like chaos.
I was going to ask too, because you worked just now, Trial of the Amazons. That was such a big crossover. And so I think too that Wonder Woman is getting this massive push that I lived in the time when people were like, oh, you read Wonder Woman? Like, you know, all like condescending or whatever. And I'd be like, yeah, thanks. I'm just going to take my book and leave. Thanks. And I don't feel that way anymore. I feel like I'm not, you know, in the comic book shop, I'm not the only person who's picking up Wonder Woman anymore. And I think that that's really awesome. But that was it. Having her have this big crossover all of a sudden was just like, yeah, where have her crossovers been? The last time I saw one was Amazon's Attack. And it's all the Amazons being like, we're here to kill all the men. And it's just like, oh my God, we're going to kill every man. And like, everybody's just like, what's your demands? And they're like, we don't have any.
Like, we're just here to do this, which is hilarious.
Our demands are clear. All the men dead.
You know what? We've all been there. That's been a day that we've all had. We're not allowed to go back to that bar ever again. Like, but I'm just like, what is this? Because that was like one of the times that whenever I was reading comics that pushed me out of comics. I think like 2007 was like the year that killed my interest in superhero comics for a long time. And a lot of it was because you have major crossovers. Diana is nowhere, right? And then you mm-hmm. have Amazon's Attack where she's like, I don't know. This is like a bunch of men. And then on the other side, we've got like women who want all the men dead. So I guess I'm going to try to mediate the situation. And you're just like, man, this is rough. This is a rough series.
This is a much better crossover. I was going to say to you, Steph, like, it's just so nice because I feel like when I read all of the Nubia comics, all the titles that you've written, it's just, as a non-binary person, it's so nice to not see gender essentialism on every page.
Yeah.
I think that so much of Wonder Woman falls into that.
Is
and
that,
there's so much of like, men are bad and women are good. And it's like, those are not discrete categories in the sense you think they are.
I am really happy you brought that up, Essie, because again, like, I don't know if this was more subconscious or whatever, but to me, it was just like, you know, just write the character, I guess. Because it would be like really weird to like lean into the fact that they're women. No shit. We're on Themyscira. Like that, there was no need to do, like, you don't have to explain or further explain what's already known. Mm. And that was another reason why, for just the Nubia and the Amazon series in itself, that I didn't want any men there. Not because like for them to punch around or anything like that, but that was the whole point, to just kind of show like, hey, you know, this may be Paradise Island. And these are all, you know, women that are on this island, but also that doesn't mean that it is paradise at the same time. Like, just because you eliminate men or you eliminate whatever one, whatever X is, does not mean that all problems and all of these other things just kind of go away. Like, stuff, like shit still exists. Like, like people are still people regardless of what you end up removing. And some things are a matter of the heart and it won't matter at all what you remove because that is just essentially who or what that person is. So, yeah, like that's always weird. When I would read comics, I'm like, I know this is a chick. I don't need you to further convince me of that by giving her a boob window. Like I didn't need it. Or doing like these very tropey things.
It's always like they can't understand what would be interesting about an island of, I would say, mostly women in this.
Yeah,
it's like they don't understand why that would be interesting. They don't understand why those dynamics or why gender essentialism might be something to unpack because it always just turns into, here's Diana. She's like the good feminist who doesn't make too many demands. And then here's the evil woman who makes all of the demands. And
oh, is that a way to work in Barbara Minerva?
I'm trying not to. But even just if you look at, say, like, I know that you were a big fan, Steph, of that Justice League Unlimited cartoon. Is that right?
Absolutely. In fact, it is always on in the background when I'm writing these issues. So, yes.
I'm a big fan, too. And I think that they really drop the ball on the Wonder Woman episodes. I think that they always do. And it always has a character who's just like, I'm here to be other Wonder Woman or something like that, you know? It's like you always have this kind of, and I'm the evil feminist who's going to kill all the men and take all your rights. And then you'll be the oppressed group or something. It's just like a really weird scenario that they always put up with those characters. Because literally, they don't think that queer people or like women talking to each other is interesting. Or like trying to figure out what that would even look like. Or what, you know, kind of like, as I said before, unpacking gender essentialism. And as SE noted before, and then before this episode as well, in the last episode we did, gender essentialism is a huge issue with this franchise. And so you kind of chipping away at that is a huge deal. But then it's like you look back on the whole history and you're like, you should have been doing this for like 100 years. Like you could have. It's like you almost did at the beginning.
I don't even have words to really articulate this, but it's just always so weird when the very simple answer is just to write the character like you would a person. If that makes any sense.
I feel like the big problem with a lot of people writing Wonder Woman stories is that they don't think women are people. And like, if you don't see women as people, you can't write women very well, turns out.
Yeah. And I mean, you just said it all, Essie. And I think that is what it comes down to. But sometimes it's even weird, though, when you have a femme writer, right? Still kind of fall into those tropes of basically, you know what I mean? Like still writing this character as their male counterpart might have.
Yeah.
I mean, like it happens. Like
Yeah. You know what I think of it as is like it's the girl boss problem where it's like when people get invested in like the girl boss narrative and they're like, but I'm a feminist capitalist. And it's like, well, those things can't coexist. So false. But, you know, where you're like, no, actually, you as a generally speaking, straight-sized, cishet, white lady with privilege running a business and making money, that doesn't do anything for my liberation. You know, like that's not liberation. And I think that what I feel real deep empathy for is that so often the people in those positions, they see the way the world works, it seems to me, and they say, well, I can see the blueprint for how I can be successful. I'll just do what these cishet white men are doing. And it's like, yeah, no, you can. Yeah, you can totally do that. Like, yeah, sure. Why? Like, why not do your thing? It's much more interesting. And I'm so glad you did. It feels like you have just burst out of the gates with like, I know what Nubia needs here and I know where to take her. And it just, every page bursts with just such deep love for these characters, such deep love for superheroes, such deep love for comics, such like, you're such a fucking nerd, Steph. Like, it is such a joy It's such a joy to read your comics because they're just full of love.
I really, truly appreciate that because, again, like, so much went into this as far as even reading George Perez's run until I had to switch to digital because I almost messed my physical books up going back and forth and just really trying to... like Nod and even Greg Rucka, like, just, you know, I'm somebody who thinks that, well, there are some stories that are choice. There are still some good things or usable things that can be used that maybe needed to be cooked a little longer or would work in a different setting or whatever. So from that, I just felt like all of that was just kind of infused into the story because, again, the thing here was to make Nubia feel as though she had been at her basement job the whole time. You just didn't see her because she was at work, which brings me to DC Pride. Because, so Big Barter, I mean, like, that's news just out now, but I was like, yeah, I would love to write this story, but can I include Big Barter? And I was told, absolutely, you can. So I will say that you are in for a treat, not only if you're a Big Barter fan, but if you're a Mr. Miracle fan too, because there is a very deep cut of some characters that are also included in this. So if you are familiar with Big Barda and Mr. Miracle and their exploits while they were, I believe, in New York, you know what I'm talking about. So that's really fun because Nubia and Barda team up and they do so to help some other women. But the way that they team up, I feel like, was just a very fun way to kind of show these two characters that often don't get to do silly stuff.
Yeah, I think that Big Barda is classically really fun when you put her in that kind of context. And it is a surprise that we don't see more of that, isn't it? Because I think that people do really lean into her as the former warrior of Apocalypse. And you're just like, yeah, totally. But she's also kind of silly because she comes to this place when she shows up in the Kirby series, right? She's so funny and like, just like, ah, everything's going on and just like lashing out, carrying people around. And Scott is just so thrilled to have this beautiful giant lady who is just like, bench pressing dudes left and right and is just like,
and bench pressing
that's
him.
That's my wife. And bench pressing him for sure, right? Like, we don't need to get into that, right? That's our fan fiction. But but it does happen even on like the panel. Don't get me wrong. Like, I think that those two are truly, we agree on the fact that that's like one of the best relationships in comics, I believe.
Oh, I love that. So, to be very honest, I think another subconscious thing is that Nubia and Io's relationship was very much inspired by Mr. Miracle and Big Barda as well.
Barda, I'm right? Because it just mind now.
it just made all the sense because to me, I'm thinking of. I feel like Io and Nubia are both interchangeable with either character, depending on the day, but. To your point, Sarah, because that relationship is just one of the more positive and beautiful relationships in comics, it was just like, it made all the sense. Like you, and also Barda has moments where Scott, well, she begrudgingly does it, but allows her soft moments. I think it's in that first run by Kirby where Scott actually ends up saving her. And Barda is like upset about that. Like Barda is pissed.
I know.
And a little embarrassed. And Scott is like, but it's okay. Cause like you're also a woman or something like that. And I was like, you know what? For 1970s, this is actually very beautiful writing, right? I'll take it. It's just so beautiful.
Their first meetings are just wonderful because in the comic, you've kind of gone through a few issues where Scott is like, I'm always on the escape, trying to escape things. And then all of a sudden, you know, here's my traumatic backstory. And then Barda kind of pops up and she is towing the company line. Like she's just like, I'm here to do the job that I was given. This is a good thing. And then you see her her faith in the system break through that issue, because she loses that girl that depended on her. She was like, I'll keep you safe, to this younger girl. I forget what her name was, or Elise, Ariel, or something like that. Ariel. Okay. Yeah. Something close to this. It's like an aura, L-E-I-E-S, you know, kind of thing. But yeah, no, I loved that story. I think that those two are so great together. But that was, I mean, you need only read that one issue where they find each other again in Apocalypse. And she is begrudging, as you say. But then he's just like, yeah, but I'm here. So he's like, yeah, I get it. I get it. But, you know, whenever we can team up and hang out.
Right. Let me save you this one time, Barda. It's going to be okay.
Yeah. He's like, I'm going to just keep showing up, and hopefully it's a love story. I don't know.
Right. But even their domestic life is something that I also appreciated and found inspiration for. So that's why you get a lot of Nubia at Io's place instead of Io at the Royal Palace, because I don't know, to me, part of Nubia ruling very differently from Hippolyta is her being among the Amazons. Not that Hippolyta was against that or anything, but she wasn't really just out there just kicking it with folks. For Nubia, because she had been champion of Doom's Doorway for so long, that was another thing that kind of made more sense to me, that she would, you know, want to be out and about. You're not in the basement anymore. You get to be topside. So
I want to be where the people are.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's walking around on, what do you call them? Feet.
Up where they walk. Anyways. Yeah. You know, actually something I wanted to, that I think dovetails here nicely with the Nubia wanting to be with the people is, you know, we got a chance to read a review copy of the first issue of Nubia, Queen of the Amazons. Thanks for sending it along, Steph. And one of the things that to me felt so queer in that story, besides sort of the going out into the world and trying to make it better, which always feels very queer to me, was the way that the Amazons choose to stand in solidarity with the protesters in Brazil. And it feels so important that what they're choosing is to be against corporations, which is, you know, the world we live in, we're all creatives, you know, it's all very strange with corporations and our relationships to them. So I was like, oh my God, look at Steph pulling off her fucking rebellious shit. And then second, that feels to me as much as head touches with Io, as much a part of Nubia's queerness. And I was curious if you think that's accurate and anything else, obviously it's you.
No, you're absolutely right, because that's the other thing with the, you know, the first series and then also this one is to show queerness in other ways. Again, it's not just, hey, look at these two characters kiss. Again, that's great, but that is only one tiny bit of queerness, or just really the human experience anyway. But yeah, I thought that was really important. And that was another thing that I was like, ooh, and I had to talk to my editor about this. I'm like, is this okay for me to have Nubia not only challenging corporations, but also government officials in this country that she isn't even from, but her sister Amazons are. So to challenge them and say, hey, why are you not protecting the citizens that put you into office? That is why you're there. You're supposed to be these civil servants. Amazons consider themselves that, or at least the way that I'm writing them in this series. So I thought it was really important for Nubia to take them to task and to be there to stand in solidarity with protesters, because that's another way to be a superhero. It's not always punching. I mean, by now, I hope that it's very clear that if I am writing a superhero thing, you'll get some punching, but that's not the only way to show your power. There's other ways to affect change, and change that will possibly last longer than you getting rid of this one bad guy. Because you do that, that's fine. But then another one pops up in their place. So, and even her mentioning we can take care of this immediately, but I want to make sure that there is change that happens that will be more long lasting than just, you know, roughing some folks up and then going about our way, because we'll be back here in, you know, 2 to 3 months, 4 to 5 business days, however long it takes for another bad guy or whatever to pop up.
I love that. It's so important, right? That like change, and change is the other narrative I just see you playing with through all of the Nubia titles, is like change is inevitable, change is important, change is queer, change is freedom, change is neutral. It's all those things. And I really love the way it's come together so much. It's really powerful stuff.
I really appreciate that. Because I don't know, you know, I'm writing stuff. And sometimes it just feels like, man, like, I hope this comes through. And it doesn't, like, somebody doesn't pick this up and say, well, I don't know what they were going for, but I won't be getting the second issue. So, because, I mean, it happens.
But, I was going to threaten to fight people in the streets, but last time I did that, someone was like, the whole thing I'm talking about is nonviolent.
I know, I don't know why I said it.
Yeah, I just want to fight, so I don't know.
I was like, I'm sorry.
As an Aries, I can talk about how you want to fight and be a pacifist all of the time, both. Like, I would love to be, and I think you can fight and be a pacifist. I think that is the line that we have to walk in this world.
Oh, absolutely. Sarah. I mean, but Sarah's right, though, because for Medusa, Nubia was like, definitely, you know, measure her blow for blow. It was like, hey, are you done fighting? Because if you are, we can handle this another way. But if you want to continue to fight, we can do that too.
No, choose your punches well. That's what we say here.
Okay. Okay. Exactly. Exactly. That's a good one.
We are coming back for the third year in a row with our extremely cool speculative anthology of all LGBTQ stories by queer and trans authors. It is called Decoded Pride. It's at dakotapride.com. And you can pick up a subscription today for only $14.99. Or if you go to any of our social media sites on Instagram or Twitter at Bitches on Comics, or if you follow us on Patreon or support us over there on Patreon, we have discount codes already all plugged in for you, and you can get it for even cheaper. So go check those out. But right now you can get it for $14.99 at dakotapride.com. And Sarah, what is Decoded? What are people going to get?
You have stories of comic books. You have stories of horror stories. You have fantasy stories, science fiction, all of the things. You know what speculative fiction is. I don't have to tell you.
Yeah, stuff that's just even just too hard to define.
Genre bending.
What's especially cool is that every story that is not a comic has a piece of art that accompanies it. We hope you'll come support us and all of the amazing creators we're getting to publish this year. We are absolutely ecstatic. Again, join us at decodedpride.com. So the lovely Monica couldn't be here with us today. She's devastated that she missed this, but she sent us some great questions for you, Steph. So I wanted to start with the first one, which is the world ready for a queer as fuck black comic revolution?
Even if they aren't, they better get ready.
Woo! Yay!
Ooh, you are all on notice. Get ready.
Happy Pride. It's June 1st as we're recording this. So happy Pride, everybody.
Happy Pride, buckle the fuck up. I love it. And then the other one is, you know, there have been stirrings about black queerness in pop culture and how it's been rebuked because people are struggling sometimes who don't sit at those intersections with the idea of that intersectionality. Here, Monica's thinking particularly about toxic fandom in the headlines again with Obi-Wan. And her question for you is, where do you see yourself in building worlds that are keen on queer and black representation?
I see myself everywhere, everything that I touch, even when it is adapting someone else's work, that is still coming through because it is so very part of me and because I am in total of, acceptance of myself. It's just going to come through. So no matter what I'm writing, be it an article, comic, I finally get into someone's TV show writing room, a film or whatever, like it will be there. And in ways that you probably didn't even think, because I don't know, like I feel like some things are just so loud that no matter how much you try to kind of quiet it, there's just no way to do it.
Yeah, why aren't you in a TV writing room already? I'm mad about that. I'm putting that on my mad list for Pride. Oh, I'm going to put that on my wrath list. It. That's what I'll put it on.
I appreciate it. I don't understand
how you're not in charge of the Harley Quinn animated series. Honestly,
no,
I don't.
For sure.
I don't understand. It would be so good. Anyways.
Maybe one day. The showrunner saw the X-Men be but what if though with the character from Abbott Elementary, Ava. And really loved it. So I don't know. Maybe I have to hope he like jotted down a note real quick and was like, possibly check back to see where she is.
Yes, truly. Steph needs a TV job. Steph needs a TV job.
Yeah.
Well, I need Steph to need a TV job. I don't even know if you need one, really. I need you to have one, I think is what I'm saying.
You know, let me do a little something. Even for one episode.
Let you tell your
I'll
jokes.
I'll get coffee. Yes, I'll grab coffee for folks. All of that, like just one shot.
Put me in, coach. Put me in.
Yes, I will run errands.
There's a Lois and Clark episode where she has a nightmare where all of the guys are just like, "Hey, Lois, maybe you could go get us some coffee," and she's like, "Ah." It always like, I don't know, whenever somebody says go get coffee, I'm always just like, it reminds me of Lois Lane being like, no.
That's chilling, especially because Lois loves coffee so much.
She loves coffee, which I canonically established
I know
by tracing the history of Lois drinking coffee, because I love Lois and I love coffee so much that I was just like, you know who loves coffee? Lois also, and went through 80 years of history just scanning pages to be like, she drinks coffee. Trust me.
It was amazing.
Thank you. It was one of my most, I'm so proud of it, honestly. If somebody looks back at like literally everything I've ever written, I'm just like, you know, that Lois Lane coffee article was pretty good.
It was really funny too. You like nailed your jokes in it. Is it still out there? I'll try and find it.
I don't even know. They tore down a bunch of stuff from sci-fi.
I know. So we'll see.
We'll see.
You know, before I let Sarah do her thing, I did want to just say, you know, we had said we might talk about Philippus and Hippolyta. And I just have to say, because we can't end the episode without it, at the end of Nubia and the Amazons, there's so much in that final issue. And I don't know if we should talk about it fully, but there's this moment where Philippus is, you know, Diana's like, no, you do it. And Philippus is like, no, you do it. And then they're like, no, let's do it together because you're my daughter and this is our family. And I've just fucking lost it, Steph. I fucking lost my mind.
Good roommate. It's cool. Like, mm-hmm. I'm just here to do roommate stuff and then I'm out. And then you're just like, okay, but they're married. And it's one of those things like Mystique and Destiny, where when it happens on the page, you're just like, oh, I was right. Like, you just like start like, gah, gah. Like, I have been making this point for a million years and I have made this connection and watched everybody else not make this connection and be like, they're probably just buds, like whatever. And I, whenever you like, you see it, you're just like, no, they're in love. And so I think that that's beautiful because it was like Mystique and Destiny, or like when Bobby comes out in X-Men, like when Iceman comes out, like there's a few moments where you're just like, I told you, like I've been telling you, like we're waiting on that with Storm, right? But there's a lot of characters where you're just like, when they finally come out, it's like there's so many, there's like a whole puzzle that connects all of a sudden. It's like the final like puzzle piece that was standing between them and better stories. And I was just like, that's it. Now I want to see Philippus in everything. So I hope that we do see more of it.
Because it was just like super important. Again, going back to, you know, George Perez, it's funny, it was from a fight scene between the two, but it was a very heartbreaking fight scene because, like, you know, again, like these Amazons being very Yes, passionate about their duty. So for Hippolyta, it was her duty as Diana's mom to go behind Doom's doorway to go get her. And Philippus, as like the queen's just right hand general or whatever, to make sure that she stays safe. So, I mean, what a heartbreaking fight. And then all the other interactions that they've had, especially also in young Diana, where Jordy has just done such great work. I was like, y'all are getting this mom and daughter moment between the two, because they needed it, especially for something like that was so tragic. And I was happy to finally like have a moment where I was like, I know y'all. So I'm confirming this for you that yes. And then also in trial to that was the first time that I think Philippus and Queen Hippolyta had ever kissed. And I was like, wait, what?
I know. I'm dying. Like, listening to this, I'm dying. Because I'm just like, no, it's been since I was a kid. Like, it's the same as, like, the Rachel Summers of it all. Or, like, you know, something like that. The Kitty Pryde of it all. Where it's like, you spend decades being like, I'm, like, high-key being gaslit by, like, the rest of the comic book reading community. Because they're all just like, no, look, Kate dated seven dudes. And I'm like, every chaotic bisexual I've ever met has dated seven dudes named Pete. Like,
it's so true.
I don't know. I was specifically pointing at you. You didn't see it. But I also wanted to say just that, like, that's the thing, though. It's like when Mystique says, I want my wife back in X-Men, right? It's like you have these moments where you're just like, not only did it get pulled off, but it got pulled off in this way that puts like chills on you because you've just been waiting for this moment and just being like, they're clearly wives. Like they're clearly, clearly wives. Like it's not even like they were just dating or something, right? Like they were definitely married for sure. And that is textual. It's on the page. That's why I've stopped referring to certain relationships as subtextual, because I'm like, it's not, though. Like, Mystique and Destiny was not subtextual. Like,
yeah, listen.
Not in the least.
You've been watching Xena again, right, Essie? So it's like, you've been texting me being like, okay, so how is this a straight relationship? And it's like, because we let straight people make the rules of it.
Yes.
Like,
yes. I'm like, Gabrielle literally says, I had a dream that I was also giving birth to your child. And I'm like, okay, you're together having a baby together. It makes sense. Mm-hmm. And you're wives.
You are homosexuals. Welcome to the homosexual club. Like, that's, it just drives you nuts, right? And so, like,
it does.
I want to say, like, as much as I, like, yes, Nubia deserves the world. Io deserves the world. But you know who else fucking deserves the world is Philippus. Because it's like, that character has been the queer in the fucking corner for like literally for this entire time. Like for so long. It's like one of those, it's like Ice Maiden or something, right? Where you're just like, one of these days somebody's gonna write Ice Maiden comeback and like it's gonna be huge, because these are characters that all, maybe not that many people remember them. All queer people who were reading comics of that time remember those characters. You remember it with the fucking clarity of like 1,000 years. Like you remember exactly whenever Cloud leaves the New Defenders. Like you remember Philippus, you know, like just kind of being there present and their relationship not being fully explained. So I don't know. This is an emotional way to end this interview, but I'm definitely just like, this is a huge, huge step that you made with that, and almost more with that than with Nubia and Io, because as much as I love that, which is hilarious because it's been canonical for like 40 years, 50 years, you know, like, man, it was just really important to read that. So I just have to say thank you so much on one level. And just like, I'm so happy that you're my friend on another level. And just, I mean, I'm so happy for those characters and the people who have been reading these characters for such a long time that aren't me, because you doing that, it's like such a wider web, right? Like there's so many, it goes out to so many people.
Absolutely. And, you know, fingers crossed if if I can pitch this to DC. But like that moment was like, so I wonder for a Black Label situation, would y'all be open to Hippolyta and Philippus? You know what I mean? Like, I don't know, like a quest that the two took or something like that. So put out good juju out there. But
can I pre-order that right now? Could I pre-order now? Is that okay?
I'm at least two sales right We're now. In. Three, We're because in. I know Monica's on, right?
She's so.
I mean, hey. If they will say yes, or even if they don't, then as I've been learning that just because, you know, the IP theme that you pitch didn't get picked up, fine. Just scrub those characters and insert your own. So there you
have
it.
That's the way to do it. And that's the way the creators make money over time. So
yes,
important move to make. So we talked a ton in this episode. Normally I ask what you have coming up, but I think that we have a pretty good idea of what you have coming up right now that you can talk about. So thanks for talking with us about this, but I have a question because you have so wonderfully guested on our Halloween episodes before, and we hope to have you back this year. But I would like to know, is there a horror movie that you've seen lately? Not that's new, but just new to you, or perhaps just one that you've revisited recently that is really standing out to you that you'd like to tell us about?
Well, it's not a great one, but it is one that stands out to me because I asked so many questions, and it was M. Night Shyamalan's Old. Wow.
There you go. It's on HBO, yeah?
It is on HBO, and I was like, well, whatever. I'm subscribed, so let me just go ahead and watch it. And, you know, a lot of things happened that probably shouldn't happen or could have been handled better, but the twist, the M. Night Shyamalan twist, I won't lie, it did intrigue me. And I was kind of like, all right, I get it, but just go watch Old. Nothing makes sense. The concept of it all is very interesting. And actually, I went to go buy the graphic novel that it is based loosely. I mean, not even maybe, I think loosely isn't even respectful enough, but the graphic novel that it is named after, which you should read. I'm blanking on the name of the writer and the artist, but it's available digitally if you want to pick it up that way or order it wherever you can find it. But that is actually worth picking up. I'm making my way through it and I'm like, wow, so you bought the rights. Why the hell didn't you just make this? Like you didn't have to go write your own thing. I get it, but like, no, you had this. You could have just did
He's
this.
Like, I'm an auteur.
And I was like, oh, okay, buddy. You are. Yes, Old. So if you all want to talk about that come October, we can, because wow.
Everybody watch up. We're going to do it. I'm excited because the last time we talked, it was, what was it? Life, Devil's Rejects, something else.
Fucking else Devil's Rejects.
That was a bonkers episode. And you know what? I'm looking forward to it this year too. So let's do it. We're going to, our annual Halloween tradition is to have Steph on just to talk about the weirdest horror movies because we are all big fans of weird horror movies.
They're great. You know, they give you nightmares, but they're also great. Maybe we can talk about Nope. Haven't seen that yet, but
I'm so excited. Those trailers,
right?
What are those trailers? I'm dying every time I go to the theater because I have like a $7 matinee theater that's pretty close to me, and every time I go, they show a Nope preview, and I'm just like, what is this?
I mean, I was into the non-horror version of the movie that they start with, you know? I was like, oh, this looks great.
This is good. Yeah.
This family of, like, horse trainers. I love horses. This is great. And then I'm like, oh, and aliens. Oh, okay, I'm in.
I can't wait. I am so excited.
I can't wait.
And I've been introduced to the wonders that is RPX, which is IMAX, but better, but cheaper. I don't understand it. But it made me really love that Top Gun Maverick. Military industrial complex.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You were tweeting about
it
that.
It really got me. I said, you know what? You won this round. Because That was definitely.
You got to give credit where credit's due.
Touche.
They won. And Tom won too.
I'm dead.
Scientology and all. Okay, I'm sorry. I'm done.
I know.
They got a pass.
For only Maverick.
And then, like, I've never seen the first Top Gun either.
Meg Ryan. Listen, Gillis and Meg Ryan. I mean, that's the thing is, like, I had this whole time period where I was, like, I was raised on whatever 90s movies and stuff and was, like, no, Meg Ryan's just always in rom-coms, whatever. I don't need to watch Meg Ryan movies because I was in the later era where people were giving her pretty uninspired stuff to work with.
Yeah.
But you look back and you watch something like Top Gun and you're just like, this woman is going to be the most famous person on the planet for like a hot second at least because the charisma is everywhere. Didn't get asked back. Gillis didn't get asked back. But I will say, I'm still probably going to watch Maverick.
I also think the first movie is like very gay. Like it's so very gay.
So was the
like, I remember watching it in college and being like, is this the gayest movie I've ever seen?
You are in love with each other. I've heard people be like, oh, it was a bromance. And I'm like, no, they you mean kiss. Romance. You mean romance.
They're planning to kiss on the lips immediately after this volleyball tournament.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway.
Well, Steph, let's pretend that you don't live here. If people wanted to find you on social media and you want them to, where can they find you?
You can follow me. I mean, you can find me on Twitter, TikTok, and Instagram as Steph_I_Will. And yes, you know, sometimes I tweet. A lot of times I've been tweeting while high because it's like the only way to kind of endure the timeline. But yeah, follow me there and, you know, you might get some comic stuff. You might get a video edit or you might just get me bitching about how I lost $15 in Kohl's cash. You just never know.
You never know. Amazing. Steph, oh, it's always such a pleasure to have you here. I laughed so hard I cried. I cried thinking about Hippolyta and Philippus. I got chills several times. I mean, you have always been such an integral part of Bitches on Comics to us. You know this. I'm just going to say it because it feels good to say it. And, you know, for Sarah and I, we've talked about a lot. It's just so cool to see how you have fought and worked and pushed and built this career for yourself. And, like, now we get to, like, revel in the glory of so much Nubia. And I just couldn't be more grateful and more excited for you. And I know there's many things you can't tell us about right now. And so you'll be back soon and we'll get to talk about all that.
Absolutely. And just thank you so much.
Thank you. Are you kidding? You're so much fun. It's always a blast. Sarah, so good to have you here as always. Monica, hey. We missed you and we love you. Kate, thanks for making us sound good. Katie, thanks for the kick-ass theme songs. You rule. Listeners, we love you. Patrons, we love you maybe more. That's such a fucked up thing to say. It's pride. If you are not our patron, that's homophobic.
You are a homophobe.
It's true.
It's all gay people, and they're just like, examine that.
It's like, yeah. Guys, we don't actually think you're a homophobe if you don't
We
have
don't
money.
Think that. Please don't.
These are yokes. We're yoking. Thank you for listening to Bitches on Comics. We are a bi-weekly podcast where we talk to your favorite comics and pop culture creators and critics about what matters to them in comics and pop culture, as you might have guessed. You can follow us on Twitter at Bitches on Comics and on Instagram at Bitches on Comics. Our website is, brace yourself, bitchesoncomics.com. If you go there, you can listen to any of our episodes, and we've got other shit that we put on tabs. I don't remember what it is. I am in charge of updating the website, however, so good luck.
Thanks for the heads up. I'll go to this website now. If you'd like to support the podcast, you can do so by rating and reviewing us on iTunes, Spotify, or Stitcher, or wherever you listen to podcasts. I'm Sarah Century, and you can find me at www.sarahcentury.com. and Twitter and Instagram. Still Sarah Century on those.
I'm Essie Fleenor. You can learn more about me at essiefleenor.com. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at @SE_Fleenor.
Bitches on Comics is recorded by Kate Warner, who plays in the band Church Fire. You can find them at churchfiremusic.com. Our music is recorded by Katie Taylor, who plays as Earth Control Pill. You can find her music at earthcontrolpill.bandcamp.com.
Bitches on Comics is recorded in Denver, Colorado. We want to recognize the indigenous peoples who have inhabited and do inhabit this land. The Arapaho Nation, the Ute Nation, the Cheyenne Nation, and others who have been erased from our history and collective memories through colonization.